There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
Hello, World Service members. Hello, Monday only listeners who have yet to succumb to the charms of supporting independent member-led broadcasting. Welcome to Monday Show, one and all. Hi, Murph. Hi, Ken.
Hey there, Owen.
How are you?
How's it going? I'm okay. There's clearly no doubt about the biggest sports story of the weekend, the MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. First time ever that WrestleMania had been headlined by a women's match. Our own Becky the Man Lynch, born in Limerick, raised in Baldoyle, took care of both Ronda Rousey and Charlotte Flair in the same match to win the WWE Raw Women's Championship and, Murph, the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship to confirm her status as the biggest star in that great sport of professional wrestling. The sweet science, I think someone called it once. Or was it the sport of kings? Is that wrestling? What a sport.
A sport. Is wrestling really a sport?
No. I mean, I have attended a WWE event in the last 12 months. I've watched both series of Glow.
Both series of Glow, the Mark Maron show.
Yeah, but does, you know? So I'm coming into this with my eyes wide open on. I'm still not entirely sure that it qualifies as a sport.
I do understand that Mark Maron is, I think, the only man in that show, and I've just gone, the Mark Maron vehicle, right?
Yeah,
that's Glow.
That's what you've done there.
The women's wrestling show. Next, you're going to say Finn Balor's victory in the Intercontinental title match last night wasn't sport either, even though he powerbombed a much bigger man and then finished it with a coup de grace from the top rope.
I have actually seen Finn Balor.
In
person.
You're actually a semi-wrestling fan, so this entire thing...
I'm really not a wrestling fan, though. But I mean, I was there. I was in attendance with my two nephews.
Did he win
Who
that
knew
night?
Rather more about it than, I don't even know. I presume he did. I mean, Finn Balor fighting in Dublin... in front of an all-Irish audience. I presume so.
Ken, you look unconvinced, but you probably didn't see that Becky Lynch, she was actually in serious trouble in this match. It looked as though she might lose at one stage, believe it or not. Herself and Ronda Rousey had already ploughed Charlotte Flair into a huge table that was in the middle of the ring for no
Charlotte
reason.
Charlotte Flair, I mean, to continue for a moment, to behave like this is an actual sporting event again. Is she anthem to Ric Flair?
Presumably. There's got to be wrestling royalty there, yeah. Then Rousey tried to...
I love the way you arrogantly... presumably, not knowing the answer to the question I just asked.
Then, she was first out. Then Rousey tried to catch Becky in her Piper's Pit move, of course, only for Becky to turn it into a cradle pin of her own. 1, 2, 3, Becky Lynch, double champion, exhilarating, shocking finish, Ken. I can see you're shocked even in the way I describe it to you. Of course, far from the most shocking thing that's ever happened in this wonderful sport, the People's Game, I believe it's called. We all remember the most shocking moment, don't we, in wrestling history? Jake the Snake Roberts versus Macho Man Randy Savage. Anybody? Idiots.
Get out of there, Macho!
Oh, no. Jake the Snake Roberts.
Look at that! Look at that!
Roberts with the King Cobra.
Macho! Deep!
That's the creepiest looking snake I've ever seen in my life. He's got it too close to it. Keep it away from it. That snake is trying... Wait a minute, the snake is running! Oh, the snake is biting him! The snake is biting him!
I'm out of here!
And you're telling me that's not a sport? An actual snake bite by
pretty
an
much what I'm
snake.
Telling you. Charlotte Flair is indeed the daughter of Rick.
Woo!
Flair.
Nice.
No problem.
Still not convinced.
Just trying to.
I'm amazed you've got this far talking about it without mentioning the only real thing that happened in the entire show, which was the stage being invaded by a lunatic who attacked Bret Hart.
What?
Yeah, there was actually an invader, like someone did the Birmingham City thing.
You sure this wasn't part of the show?
Pretty sure. I mean, it was a bit of a non sequitur. You know, I mean, the guy didn't have any. He wasn't established as a character earlier in the thing at all.
Bret the Hitman Hart is getting on a bit now. He maybe doesn't need to be involved in.
He's staged. A survivor of strokes and cancer.
Yeah.
Possibly not in his prime.
He's still the excellence of execution, though, right?
Well, he got slammed to the ground along with the woman that he was standing there with. Who I don't know who she was. Possibly, I mean, I didn't see that. I obviously didn't watch the show. I just
somehow
saw this video.
Missed the matches.
And then there was a big pile-on of security personnel who gave the guy a pretty bad beating. As the crowd chanted "Fuck him up," you know. They slaked their bloodlust.
Yeah, you still can't believe the time Shawn Michaels put the sharpshooter on Bret the Hitman Hart, who invented the sharpshooter. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I've got a new favourite sports person after the weekend. Second favourite besides Becky Lynch.
Wow.
Who's that?
You go on there, bud.
Jordan Conroy.
Ah. Jordan.
Yeah, Air Jordan. Yeah, player of the tournament as the Ireland Sevens won their qualifier tournament in Hong Kong.
The jokey segment is officially over, by the way. This is the real sport.
What did he do? Yeah, he scored 10 tries in 6 games as the Irish Sevens teams won their qualifier tournament in Hong Kong to take their place in the World Series for next year, which means they'll be mixing it with New Zealand, Fiji, France, and so on. I watched the semi-final and final. Scored an unbelievable try in the semi-final when he was being bundled into touch by two men, twisted over back to front, somehow managed to dot down with the ball behind his back, if you know what I mean, if you can kind of picture that, extending his arm behind him. If the final in Hong Kong was hilarious, against Hong Kong, there was a moment where he turned the ball over himself. It was just a little bit loose. He picked it up. And no sooner he picked it up than the commentator said, "Oh, off goes Jordan, try time," kind of thing. And I said, there's a guy in the backfield there, but he just knew.
No, they don't matter.
They don't matter. He knew he had the pace that he was just going to burn that guy, and there's so much space to get into. He's such a graceful runner as well. Why didn't you tell me more about Jordan Conroy?
He's a joy to watch.
Yeah. Thanks, Simon. I'm late to the party here. He's the most exciting Jordan in Irish rugby right now.
Oh.
Oof. And that's saying something.
The Larmers are not, all of them, all the Larmers are not going
to
like that.
Matt Williams has long been a champion.
You're going to have to accept it, though.
This form of the game, and he's pushed people in Ireland to properly give sevens a go. So we'll have Matty on a little bit later. And we're going to chat to Westmeath's John Heslin, who has long been a top footballer, really top Gaelic footballer. And he's playing for one of the form teams in the country. Westmeath started the year by winning the O'Byrne Cup and knocking the Dublin juggernaut off
permanently
its
off
rails.
Track.
Off track.
Westmeath were the first.
Exactly.
The first of many to stick the stiletto in under the Dublin rib cage.
They've backed that up. John Heslin, well, he wasn't actually playing. He was doing a PhD apparently at the time. So we might get into some PhD chat for all you World Service members out there. And non-World Service members indeed. But yeah, they could end up, as any of the Westmeath players involved, in some sort of, I can picture it now, if say Donegal win the All-Ireland, or say it's Mayo's one, you'll get a separate little bit just on Westmeath starting the rot.
We should have known.
Sure it was a reserve team, sure it was the O'Byrne Cup.
Sure, Dublin were literally not in the country. The Dublin team that we recognise as the Dubs were actually on their
holidays.
But listen,
now it's good
to be hearing it here.
And they also backed that up by winning the Division 3 final at the weekend, which is why we're talking to John Heslin today. But first, Ken.
They don't want to give the amount of money.
I turned down the opportunity to manage South Korea.
I want loads of money.
Yeah. But I can say it's at least 100,000 euros in cash.
Legal disclaimer, that €100,000 is not the same €100,000 being probed by the Oireachtas Committee this week. Former Monaghan Mayor Hugh McIlvaney not involved in this process. But the FAI has issued another statement ahead of Wednesday, Ken.
Yes.
Woohoo!
New statement. This one comes to you from FAI President. Who's the FAI President?
Donal Conway.
Correct, Donal Conway.
I might not have known that before the slew of statements.
Well, you know, maybe
the last few weeks.
Isn't that what everyone talks about? Isn't that the standard of normality with a sports administrator? You're not supposed to know who they are. That's how you know they're doing their job properly. You know, Philip Brown, no one's ever heard of this guy. The other guy, the GAA guy. No one's
I'm
ever
not even going to say his name.
No one's ever even heard of the guy.
I wouldn't do the guy a disservice by giving him himself the oxygen of, Tom Ryan. Go on then.
Unfortunately, I have to say this is from Donald Conway. Otherwise, you wouldn't know who it was from. It says, the Football Association of Ireland has advised its attendance list for Wednesday's meeting of the Oireachtas Committee on Transport, Tourism and Sport. All requested members of the FAI are included on the list.
Okay, that's important because the Sunday Times was saying yesterday that there was still no absolute confirmation that Delaney was actually going to show, but he is, yeah.
And there was a deadline supposedly at 12 o'clock today which passed by. Was there any confirmation that he was going to be there?
The association notes comments made by Sport Ireland and the Oireachtas Committee and acknowledges their concerns.
Further, a lot of noting and acknowledging in the last couple of weeks, isn't there?
Further, the association recognises and shares the desire for the matters to be addressed as soon as possible with due regard to the different ongoing processes. The board acknowledges the misgivings raised by Sport Ireland and the Oireachtas Committee last week and is also cognizant of the concerns of the football family and all stakeholders. So they actually had to go to the thesaurus to try to find all of the different ways that you could say this, you know,
we're
cognizant, etc.
The board is seeking to fully address all concerns in a determined and transparent manner, and many steps are being taken to do so and to establish the requisite detail for Sport Ireland and the Oireachtas Committee. As well as the board establishing a subcommittee to lead the work, the global auditing and consulting group Mazars has been commissioned to conduct an independent and in-depth external review of matters. The association's advisors are working with Mazars to finalise the terms of reference for the review so work can begin. The board has also requested that this review be completed as soon as possible. Pending the review by Mazars.
Sorry, is this one of those things where you give a computer program like 10 FAI statements and then you have to read the 11th FAI statement created entirely by the algorithm?
The association has separately and urgently engaged Grant Thornton to conduct an internal review of the association's books, records and ledgers. Grant Thornton are on site at FAI HQ since Tuesday, April 2nd. I regret that we were not in a position to assist Sport Ireland with answers to its questions before it attended the committee last Wednesday. The FAI is engaging with Sport Ireland, and communicated at a meeting with Sport Ireland on Friday evening that no disrespect was intended by the lateness of the letter of the 2nd of April or its brief contents.
What's so funny?
Its brief contents. What was it like? One line.
Well, John Tracy essentially read it out. Not take long.
I accept more information would have assisted Sport Ireland and the committee, and I regret that it could not be provided before their meeting. The association has advised Sport Ireland that we are moving as fast as we can, being mindful of the complexity involved and the need to ensure that all statements we make are accurate and processes are fair and robust. We are also advised that some recent comments made by the FAI did not accurately reflect the board's level of awareness of the existence of the €100,000 issue in 2017. Oh, and I'll read that line again.
Wow.
We are also advised that some
We also advised.
We also advised that some recent comments made by the FAI did not accurately reflect the board's level of awareness of the existence of the €100,000 issue in 2017. This matter is being considered by the board subcommittee. The steps outlined are taking time. Okay. I don't know if that sentence was necessary, but meanwhile, the association has offered to meet Sport Ireland's audit staff and, with the assistance of Grant Thornton, to go through the relevant accounts to assure Sport Ireland that all government funding has been properly spent since the last Sport Ireland audit of the FAI. The FAI has also been in correspondence with the Office of the Director of Corporate Enforcement and remains available to assist in dealing with its particular inquiries. I look forward now to engaging with committee members on Wednesday as we seek to address all issues raised. So, that's the latest statement. I mean, that statement sounds like a bit under pressure. You know, there seems like there's lots of different sort of people that need to be appeased now. Sorry about the letter. Sorry, it wasn't, no disrespect. You know, everyone, you know, we've got like this review and this inquiry and everyone is, you know, and all this is taking time. It's taking time. The interesting line there, though, I mean, there's a few, but the main one is that some recent comments made by the FAI did not accurately reflect the board's level of awareness.
Yes, yeah, now, well, what's that in reference
what
to?
Is this referring to? I can't say for sure what it's referring to. However, from their statement of March 18th, so this is going back to the weekend when it all blew up. If you remember what happened Saturday, there was a statement from the FAI at 11:21 p.m. saying, John Delaney had provided the association with a €100,000 bridging loan. It turned out that he'd actually been in court earlier that day trying to prevent Mark Tighe and the Sunday Times printing their story about this €100,000 transaction. That came out on Sunday. Then on Monday, they, you remember they were sending out tons of statements, but this statement says the FAI is... The Football Association of Ireland has received a number of questions in relation to a bridging loan made to the association by CEO John Delaney in April 2017 and repaid in full 2 months later. This is not the first time they'd mentioned it. That was on the Saturday night when Delaney said it was a bridging loan. An FAI spokesman said, the FAI is currently undertaking a full review of its executive governance and senior management structures. This review will be completed and all actions approved by early April, when a full press conference will be held to reveal all outcomes. In the meantime, the association reiterates that the bridging loan was made in the best interests of the FAI in 2017 when it experienced a short-term cash flow issue. The board of the FAI has been kept fully informed in relation to this matter at all times. So that is a comment from the FAI reflecting the board's level of awareness of the existence of the 100,000 issue, to use the language of this most recent statement, which says that they had been kept fully informed in relation to this matter at all times. Now, whether this is the statement, whether this is the recent comments they're referring to when they say comments made by the FAI did not accurately reflect the FAI's board's knowledge, I don't know. But that's an example of the FAI making a comment that the board knew about this at all times, and now we have a line from them saying some recent comments did not accurately reflect. Whether these two things link together, I can't say for sure.
Yeah, but it's that's interesting. Mm. That is interesting. What you said, there was anything else that struck you in particular there?
Oh, well, I mean, like just that sort of tone is not... it doesn't sound very confident, does it?
No. No, it really doesn't.
It sounds like they've got a few problems here now. And, you know, I mean, this thing tomorrow is going to be pretty interesting. I mean, I know a lot
Wednesday.
Of these types of... Wednesday, sorry, of course. A lot of these things turn out to be anticlimactic. But it does look as though there's a lot of material here to work with. There's a lot of questions to be asked and answered. Mm. And the FAI, as they say, want to do everything as transparently as possible. So it should be interesting to see how it turns out.
Yeah, well, there will be a lot of coverage of that hearing on the World Service this week. It is on Wednesday, as we said. Also, Champions League quarterfinals and US Masters preview. A busy time and a perfect time to sign up for all you non-members out there, or not yet members, I'll call you optimistically. SecondCaptains.com, €5 a month plus VAT. You know the deal. It's your choice. The Westmead footballers are no stranger to jumping up and down the divisions. 10 times now in 12 years, they've either been relegated or promoted. Thankfully, it's been more of the latter in the last few seasons. They've gotten out of Division 3 this time, and they go up as champions after yesterday's win against Laois in the league final. John Heslin, good to talk to you, and congrats on a great year so far.
Thanks very much, lads, and thanks for having me.
Division 3 is a particularly hard-fought division, even more so this year. Three teams finishing 10 points. Laois pips down for promotion by virtue of scoring one of a plus one scoring difference. But you guys came out on top of the whole thing. How much story are you putting in that achievement?
Yeah, look, definitely we went up with the idea of winning the final. You know, as you've mentioned there, the last 12 years we've been up and down, I think 10 years. So we've been in quite a few finals in the league, and, you know, we've only won, you know, a couple of them, I'd say. So, it was just great to go up and win it. And as you've highlighted there, the excitement around, you know, it all went down to the last day. And I think that, you know, even the down fellas themselves probably thought they were promoted. And, you know, the results didn't go their way in the end. And, you know, they're staying in Division 3 next year. So it is quite competitive. But every division is, you know, even when we won Division 4 2 years ago, like, it was still very tight. Like, you know, and you're talking about Division 4 and people think, oh, that's, you know, it's the bottom tier, mightn't be that competitive, but when you're in there, it is a dogfight. Like, and each game matters towards you getting promoted. Like, so no, we're just very happy to get the win, and and have some silverware to show for it.
Any idea, if you take a longer view on it, why it has been like that over that decade or so, John? Well, a lot of counties fairly meander through the league and might stay in Division 3 or whatever it might be. You guys have been up right at the top and been down right at the bottom.
Yeah, we have put a lot of research and time into thinking about why that is, and I think it's just because we're entertainers, you know? We like to give people some entertainment, and whether that is positive or negative by going up and down, I think that that's what we can put our finger on it. But I know, to be honest with you, I couldn't tell you why, but look, sure, as someone said, isn't it better going up and going down and having something to fight for, whether that be relegation or a final, you know? Winning the last game, the game on the last day of the league to stay up, is just as exciting probably as going up the next division on the final day. You know, it depends on the way you look at it, and sure, it's all a bit of excitement, but I don't know the exact reason why we've gone up and down.
Yeah, and you know, even that point about relegation and even post-relegation to win the last game of the league, I mean, a lot of this is about momentum, you know, and so whatever you can carry into the championship, even if it is six losses and a win on the last day, which I think Roscommon did the year they ended up as Connacht champions in 2017, I mean, it all counts for something. So you go into the championship this year on the back of 8 games played in the league, only 1 defeat, and a trophy at the end of it. So that's a pretty good spring by any standard.
Yeah, definitely, and not to forget to mention the Burn Cup as well. Like, you know, in fairness to Jack and the lads, since they've come in, they've got a good bit of momentum and a bit of a winning attitude with them. So that's been great. But look, you can read into that a bit too much. Also, as you know, the 2 years that we got to the Leinster final in recent years, we were relegated both those years. So, you know, it's 6 of 1 and 6 of another, I suppose. You know, but it's all about the attitude and mentality. While we won and while we got promoted and everything like that, There's a good attitude around the team at the moment, and everybody's buying into the things that Jack and Pascal and the lads are bringing. So, no, it's been good.
You mentioned Jack there. That's Jack Cooney, your manager, who's a Westmeath man. Yeah. And you guys haven't had, he's probably the first Westmeath, first local as such manager of the team that you have had, John, I would say, in your career. Does he get the Westmeath psyche in a way that outside managers can't?
Yeah, look, I would say yes, he does. But to add to that, also, he's been in our shoes. You know, he's played for Westmeath, of course, but you know, played at inter-county level and knows what is expected. And you know, yeah, it would help that he is a Westmeath man. You know, but also to add to that, like, that's his background. You know, he's very much into sports. I think it's a sports science degree he has himself, and you know, he's a very, very fit man himself. And like, I think that the lads that didn't make the 26 on Saturday were in Wolfhound Gym Saturday morning, where we do our strength and conditioning work. And I think Jack was actually leading the pack in that gym session. So it can be quite intimidating when you're paired up with Jack, because you have to be on top form, or else he'll be lifting and all the weights heavier than you are. So,
Jesus, yeah, he's got to be careful. He's got to be careful of that kind of stuff, John. Yeah. I'm just thinking, you constantly hear these stories in soccer of, you know, like David Beckham supposedly wasn't able to take free kicks properly, so Glenn Hoddle showed him how it should be done. You don't want your manager to be too fit and showing you guys up.
No, but I've never said it to Jack either, because I'd be afraid to say it to him, but I'd say he was just in the gym doing a few bicep curls because he knew he'd be on the camera Saturday. But I never said that to him, because I'd be afraid what he'd say. But he's a fit man, and it's great to have his enthusiasm and interest in it, in fairness.
Is there anything being made of it in the county that he is a Westmeath man? Has this been any sort of bone of contention in other years, that it's always been outsiders?
Yeah, it is important, John, to be fair, isn't it, that homegrown managers see that there is a pathway to the most prestigious job, as far as they're concerned, which is to manage their own home county?
Yeah, I you know, the second point is very, very important, you know, because at the end of the day, the show goes on, and you want to be creating a sustainable performance camp, we will say, for the whole entire county, be it that young managers up and coming. Yeah, as you said there, they can see a route to where they can eventually become the senior manager. Was it a bone of contention? Look, I don't think that people are too discontent if a manager from outside the county comes in and manages the senior inter-county team, albeit if performances are good and the lads are happy and everybody's enjoying it, like, you know. But you know, when Jack is getting you going in the dressing room, and you know, holding that crest and things like that, you know, he genuinely means it, like, and he's done it before.
Yeah, you have already referenced the O'Byrne Cup win there, and you weren't involved with that because you're studying for your PhD. How have you managed to juggle all of that, sort of the educational responsibility of taking on a project of that size, and then also coming back to play intercounty football?
Yeah, I'm about 32 days out from submission date now, so the 10th of May is when I'm handing it up. But yeah, I wasn't part of the O'Byrne Cup panel. Tried to put in a little bit more work into the thesis around that period of time. I wasn't sure if I was going to be involved in the league at all. But through consultation with Jack and he assured me that, you know, I get help whenever it may be needed or time off when it may be needed. You know, it was hard to stay out of the league. I missed the first couple of the games of the league, and it was hard to stay out of it because of the excitement that the league creates. You know, the championship in recent years doesn't get that excitement until maybe July or August. You know, okay, we've been involved in Leinster finals, and obviously they're in near the end of June. But like, the championship really struggles to get going, that momentum, because of breaks and everything like that. Whereas the league comes hot and heavy, and it's just hugely exciting. Like, so, and on top of that, all the positive vibes that were coming out of it. So I was lucky enough to go back into the league, into the team for the league halfway through the league. But as I said, yeah, PhD is getting a little bit of focus now, because I do have a full-time job at MSD Animal Health as well. So trying to juggle them is a task. But when you're involved with good teams, both professionally and through my hobby with football, you know, when you have good people around you, they definitely provide a helping platform to get some things done.
What's the PhD, John? Would we even understand the title of what you're studying?
Well, I hope that I understand it first. I don't really mind if you guys understand it or not, but I hope I understand it. But it's the effect of breed and nutrition on reproduction in heifers, we'll say. There's a longer title, mind you.
No, that's okay. I ask because we have a surprising amount of listeners who are doing PhDs and have been in contact over the years. And funny, it struck me that a point that they make is how lonely in existence it can be. You know, you're really buried into this thing, particularly if you're getting close to your submission date there. So I'd imagine the football's always, I guess, a welcome distraction, but in this case in particular, it must be nice to meet the lads and have a few training sessions and play these big games.
Yeah, definitely. It is a bit of a distraction, in fairness. I would say that, you know, you're coming down the home stretch now. As I said, hopefully be handing up before the 10th of May. You're kind of in a different frame of mind sometimes. And for example, I didn't really partake in any celebrations at the weekend because I have study leave at the moment, and I'm doing that, doing the studying, like, you know. So I think that sometimes lads mightn't realise it, or mightn't know the task that's at hand. But no, definitely it takes your mind off it, and sure, there's plenty of studies out there to show that, you know, your exercise or partaking in team sports helps your attitude or your focus when you're studying as well. So no, it has been good and refreshing to get a few blowouts with training. All right.
Yeah, sounds like it'll be wrapped up then by the championship. You must be confident enough about Leinster this year, given how things have gone so far.
Yeah, Leinster, Sam Maguire, I'd say, will win the whole lot of it.
That's the spirit, John.
You know, I think that once we won the O'Byrne Cup, people were thinking that way. Sure, championship, Leinster championship, it's a completely different competition. Like, without, okay, you've mentioned their momentum and everything like that, but like, it, and I know obviously it's just by name, it's a different competition, but really and truly, the focus for a championship and league is completely different. Just look at the teams in Division 1 and where their focus has just gone up each game as the league has progressed, and it's going to just go to a different level now in preparation for the championship. Where do we stand in terms of a Leinster championship? I wouldn't be able to say. A lot of teams in Leinster are going quite well at the moment, and I think that there has been a lot of negativity around the quality of Leinster football, certainly throughout my whole playing career, because of the dominance of the Dubs. But like, you see Mead getting promoted this year. That's not just off the back of a successful year this year, a successful pre-season. They got promoted from the work that they put in the last number of years, and they have the quality of players there. You know, they're going playing in Division 1. Ourselves and Laois got promoted from Division 3, and we're going up to Division 2, and Louth have played some excellent football in Division 3. We drew with them the last game of the group stage of the league. Like, do you know what I mean? So there's some teams playing very well in the Leinster Championship. So it's hard to call who'll get through. You know, we have a difficult game against Laois, not just because they're at the same level as we are, but because we played them twice already in the league this year, you know. So, like, that we'd just be, without giving you the old cliche answer, we can't look too far past that. It's knockout competition and you have to just focus on Laois, you know.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Well, listen, we better leave you focus on the thesis there. Yeah, time is ticking now, John. Thanks so much for talking to us today.
No bother, but before I go, if you don't mind drawing your attention to a fundraiser for a local Westmeath lad, I think you would have seen us with the T-shirts on in Crow Park after the league final. Lee Wallace is suffering from a rare bone sarcoma, and his family are currently raising money for some of the treatment that he requires. So the GoFundMe link, I can tweet the GoFundMe link, and if you guys would put it up, that would be great.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's a very, very sad thing. A guy the same age as me, we're talking about the difficulties I'm having there of time and everything like that. That's all irrelevant for the battle that guy is going through, and the whole county and the GA community, I would like to say, proudly say, are behind Lee. So if you guys don't mind sharing the link, that would be great.
No, that's absolutely, John. Listen, well put. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Okay, guys. Take care. Thank you.
Flame hair, truth, Mr. Ken Early.
Every so often, I'm on the bus and I suddenly turn around and bite somebody.
John Hayes, I'm talking about, aren't you? John Hayes. Now, I always thought that was ridiculous.
He had won the victory over himself. He loved Brendan Rodgers.
That's where it comes from. Thanks a lot, Pepe.
Fair to say, anybody could have managed those guys?
No, of course not. Let me show you right now before you give it
up. Who would have thought of Westmead, the unknowable mystery of Gaelic football? Why do they keep getting promoted and relegated?
Well, I mean, you know, no point in asking me. I mean, you've just asked Mr. Westmeath's John Hesson. He's like, I don't know. I couldn't tell
you. He's a smart cookie. He's in the middle of doing the PhD and he can't work. Do your PhD and why you keep getting relegated and promoted, John. Damn it, that's a line I thought of too late.
Might
have sounded rude. It wasn't that way.
Maybe a little terse. A little too on the nose, maybe.
Yes.
But nevertheless, pretty mental. I mean, it's not even like they're yo-yoing between two divisions. It's not like they're in Division 3 and then they go up to Division 2 and then they go back down. They've been in Division 1 and Division 4, and it's been just a constant stream of promotions and relegations. But all a lot of fun.
What would you say? Would you say they're a Division 2 team? I know they will now be a Division 2
team. You know, if they're in Division 2...
Division 1 was a bit freakish. Like, they're not one of the top 8 teams in the country.
I would also say Division 4 is a bit freakish. So I would say they're in the 8 teams that comprise the top 4 in Division 3 and the bottom 4 in Division 2.
Gotcha.
So I don't know if that answers your question.
None of this is answering my question.
They're about the 16th best team in the country. How about that?
Ireland 7's victory in Hong Kong this weekend will have pleased many people, not least Matty Williams, who has long been beating the 7's drum. How are you, Matty?
Oh, I'm great, Alan. Lovely to talk to you.
Why do you see it as such a big deal compared to a lot of people who have largely ignored this version of rugby?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. From my own perspective, I played a lot of 7's, and that's where I guess I'm coming from. It's just so much fun to play. It is just a hoot to go and play 7's because there's so much space that's never there and you're running and you've got the ball in hand and there's tries going left, right and centre. But some people would say, well, it's not real. And it's not real. But what's happened since the commencement of the world circuit, that this has become its own sport. It's a sub-sport within a sport. But it opens the door to so many different people of different physiques that might never get to the top in 15s. It also opens the door to people from other sports, of some really great athletes, especially in the women's game, that might be a great camogie or a great basketballer or just a really good sprinter. And it allows them to have crossover sports and compete in incredible locations around the world. And of course, it's an Olympic sport now.
Do you see it as potentially ever getting much bigger than it currently is?
Yeah, I do. It's certainly in Australia, if I can use the experience that the Australian 7's program is going through and has gone through, It's becoming a sport again in its own. And what they're doing there is they're actually playing that in summer. And in particular in girls' schools, the take-up is massive. I was only reading today in the Australian Rugby Union's annual report that the take-up of the women's game at both 15s and 7s is quite extraordinary. But I do see it expanding, and I also see the 7s program around the world expanding, because when you go to a 7s event, it's not like going to a normal game of rugby. It's a party. It's an event. There's some rugby going on in the background that's sort of the excuse. But it's a game every 15 minutes. The entertainment keeps going. There's music. There's bands playing. It's the Sydney Sevens is just a phenomenal day when it's happening down there. So I think there's a huge scope for it around the world.
So, you know, it is still seen as a bit of an adornment to the 15s, and money-wise, it's not even close. But in lots of ways, it's kind of more modern and, like you say, more accessible. So America are currently top of the men's standings with a couple of rounds to go. If you're looking at new markets and potential big money, maybe that's somewhere it goes. And as you said, it's in the Olympics. And status-wise and money-wise, it's the men's and women's games are much closer than in the 15s. And it might well be the future of women's rugby. And there are hints in Ireland it might be too. So there's lots of things going for it. But the thing that holds it back is money-wise is not even close to the 15s game in men's rugby.
Yeah, it's not. And there's a strategy, a long-term strategy here from the old IRB, the current World Rugby, that put this into place. That was to get it in the Olympic movement. So if you're going to grow the game of rugby, how are you going to do that in countries where rugby is culturally not well known or accepted? Once it's in the Olympic movement, all those countries poured money through the Olympic movement into establishing sevens programs, and that gets rugby in the door. So while in the short term, all the things, the failures you pointed out are quite correct, it has moved significantly on for the top teams. You can have a pretty good living as a young athlete, traveling the world, being paid by your home union. All your expenses are paid by World Rugby. So the union doesn't cost the union anything for travel or accommodation when you go to the tournaments. You just get money on top of that. So the structure for long-term growth in the game is very good. The strategy to get it into other countries is huge, because of that Olympic movement. Having said that, see, the interesting part, that is what held back Irish sevens, in my opinion. For many years, when I was pushing the sevens barrow, the problem was that potentially, if you were an Ulster player, you would be eligible to play for Great Britain at the Olympics. And this was very, very much feared by the administrators in Irish rugby, that there would be a split in the game at that level, because all through the Troubles, and it's well documented that rugby held its communities together through all that trouble, and they saw this as a potential way of that splitting it. If someone said, I'm an Irish sevens player, but now at the Olympics I'm going to play for Great Britain, and to me that was the biggest hurdle they had to get over. And for many generations of players, they just wouldn't go there. I started. When I was coaching Ulster, I revived this Ulster Sevens team. A guy called Ryan Constable, many people remember, coached the site for us, and we put him in a lot of tournaments to try and get Sevens going. We started an independent Sevens program for men and women in the Republic down in Dublin, again trying to get the IRFU to respond. And it took David Nusifora to come in as high performance manager to bridge all those political gaps. And they were significant, and he deserved massive credit for the establishment of that program, bringing in Aunt Eddie and moving the whole thing forward. So it's a significant jump for our young athletes.
Maybe potentially the biggest area for growth is the injury profile for those involved compared to 15s. And if we're looking at the biggest threat to rugby at the moment, I would say it's concussion, and sevens doesn't struggle with that. So if you're trying to convince your kid to stay involved or get involved in rugby, maybe sevens is the easier sell. And I'm not saying 5 years from now, but maybe 20 years from now, the reality is something like sevens is closer to what's played across the world.
I don't think so, Si. Like I you know, I'd, if you played sevens, mate, you still get hit hard. Like I said, you still get hit hard in sevens. So I don't know. There's not the clear outs and a few other things. But it certainly does open the game up to a different market. And I think that market would come in. You know, for example, if you look around the sevens world, there are so many wonderful players who are very slight people. Now, they're tough. They've still got to be tough. You've got to make physical contact. Mm. You've got to make your tackles. So it's not a point of being weak, but they have incredible speed and agility, but they mightn't have a lot of bulk. And that also opens up to a lot of different racial profiles, you know, where we're seeing across the different countries, like the Kenyans, you know, have been absolutely glorious in what they play in rugby. The Spanish are coming in the top areas of the game. We're seeing Southern American countries like Uruguay and so on come into and play some really good sevens. The French team made the final of the top Hong Kong sevens yesterday. And beat New Zealand for the first time on the way through. So it is opening up all what the sport's supposed to be, which is multinational people of all sizes and moving them through into the game. And this is just another area of this game that would help us. And listen, for the Irish people, the Celtic genetics, and I'm a Celt, so, you know, I'm putting myself in this basket. We're not the biggest people in the world. And so, but we have great athletes. We know we've got great agility. We've seen this all around the world. You're seeing boxers and rowers, and our hockey team, women's hockey team, make the semi-final, the final of the World Cup. We're seeing all these great athletes, but sometimes in the really big power events, we haven't been as strong. And now so there's so many more athletes can play sevens at the top end in Ireland than can play 15s at the top end. And that will, you definitely have an impact into the women's game. It's certainly been that way in Australia. The women's sport has been absolutely booming in Australia because our girls in Australia won the gold medal. None of those girls, or I think it was only two or three of them, were actually rugby players. A lot of them were recruited in from other sports, from touch footy, from netball, basketball, and they came in and they put them through a four-year program like an Olympic athlete, and they won a gold medal. So there's definitely, you know, girls and boys sitting out there listening to this today in the Irish community that could get involved, mightn't have a lot of experience in rugby, but can get involved if they've got the talents and skills and the mental application and go through and compete in Olympics and hopefully medal.
Yeah, well, the women's team, Irish women's team, have made even more rapid progress. They're currently lying sixth in the table. So if the men and women make the Olympics, you're looking at viable medals there. Hypothetical, the Irish men's team going into the Olympics, they're looking hot, but they haven't used any of the 15s players. Do you jettison in Keith Earls to guarantee you an Olympic gold medal?
History would say that fails. Your automatic reaction is to say yes. Now, New Zealand did it at the Rio Olympics.
Yeah.
It was Sonny Bill Williams, and he got a very bad injury there, unfortunately, and it failed. Again, like in a game, when we're playing 15s, you know, your maximum time the ball's in play is about 2.5 minutes, and you've got to keep going. The game's in play for about between 45, let's say 45 minutes out of the 80 minutes the ball's in play, maybe a little bit more, up to 55. In a game of sevens, the ball's in play for 15 minutes for three times a day at unbelievable levels of intensity. So you can't carry the bulk, so they drop their weight. But the conditioning is totally different. And you meet these sevens players, as I went training with the Australian guys a couple of times, and they are absolutely sensational athletes, but they're so lean. It would take you a good six to 10 months of playing sevens to get ready to play play the game at the top level. You know, I guess it's like any sport. You know, you can't just parachute in. It doesn't work that way. But if guys like Israel Folau in Australia is talking seriously about taking a year off to play sevens because he wants to be an Olympian. If you had a year to do it, yeah, you could do it. If you give yourself 5-4 months, no, it'll be a failure.
All right. Well, there goes Simon's Keith Earls plan. Anyway, we'll leave it there. Maddie, brilliant stuff. Thanks so much.
Pleasure, guys. Always lovely to talk to you.
He's just a crying big baby.
But you cannot call him a player. Baby.
Coach! wanted a victory, but it didn't happen. What happened?
I want victory for every game.
Where do you think you got it all wrong today?
Which is the game you wanted a victory, but it didn't happen? What happened?
Well, it's just the nervousness.
You look frustrated on the pitch.
Which is the game you wanted a victory, but it didn't happen? What happened?
You wanted victory.
Well, I wanted victory.
Which is the game you wanted a victory, but it didn't happen? What happened?
Where do you think you got it all wrong today?
We won against them in the Premiership and we never said they are baby.
He's just a crying big baby.
And you cannot call a player a baby.
Big, big week of sport coming up. Loads to get into on the World Service. Look forward to doing that over the next few days. There's an Irish Times headline, Rory McIlroy can seal greatest success in history of Irish sport. If he goes and wins the Masters and completes the career Grand Slam, I presume, is the rest of that. I don't want you to read the piece, Ken. I'm not even going to tell you the author. I just want you to react blindly to that headline.
Obviously, I don't take it seriously. You know,
one of only, he would be only the sixth man ever.
I think so.
Tiger Woods, all these kind of.
I just don't think golf is a sport. I'm sorry, but I just don't.
Golf is not a sport.
So we start with wrestling isn't a sport. Golf is.
Golf is not a sport.
I would rather watch wrestling than golf.
Well, it's a great sport, but
the outfits are better. The outfits are better. It's true. The beefs are a little more entertaining. The beefs don't end with you hating both of the members of the beef.
What about Padraig Harrington and Sergio Garcia? Didn't Padraig Harrington get a snake and go up to Sergio Garcia? No, that's the difference. That was Jake the Snake. I think that's a different thing. Okay.
I think that was on the Desert Swing in the 2008 European Tour. That's neither here nor there.
Long forgotten. Water to the bridge. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you indeed, Owen. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, everybody.
Which phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.